Salama, thank you, and welcome to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. It's Thursday, June 11th, 2026. Today, we feature the Juno Community Foundation's Arts Vibrancy Endowment and the Artist Awards Grant Program, which is now open to all Juno artists. On HIT's current show features artist Clifton Guthrie returning to our roots, runs through this summer. And Perseverance Theater has a summer camp, the Venerable Star Program, and a new season on the horizon featuring the first ever Thlinkit opera. Those conversations are coming up later this hour on Juno Afternoon from your community-supported public media station, KTOO. You can also catch us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. We are going to start today with the Alaska Sustainable Fisheries Trust new SeaBank report. What's new and what does it mean for you? The Alaska Sustainable Fisheries Trust supports Southeast Alaska's fisheries-based economy in a variety of ways. One of those is the SeaBank report. There's also the podcast, the SeaBank Chronicles, and they offer convenings, a quota bank, and so many other programs. And today we are pleased to welcome Paul Olson, author of the SeaBank report. Gunath Cheesh, Paul, welcome in. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm doing quite well, Boston.
Thank you so much for being here. We also have a familiar voice to the airwaves of KTOO from her lovely segment that she used to do called Savory Moment, Beth Short-Rhodes, who is now the producer of the SeaBank Chronicles podcast. Gunath Cheesh, Wasiti, how are you today, Beth?
Gunath Cheesh, Boston. Thanks so much for having us. I'm doing very well.
Absolutely. Okay. We have a packed program today, so let's get right into it. So, Paul, what is the SeaBank report?
It was kind of the brainchild of a Juno financier, Sam Skaggs, and Sitka ecologist, Richard Nelson. And their idea was to kind of quantify the value of Southeast Alaska's ecosystems in a way that could educate people about why they're so special. Sam's focus was on estuaries, which are some of the world's most valuable ecosystems in terms of what they produce for fisheries and for recreation. And they needed a writer, and that turned out to be me. I've done a lot of research and writing on Southeast Alaska issues over the years. I'm a commercial fisherman. I practiced before the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, so they tasked me with working on what are called ecosystem services, and there were a group of economists during the 1990s that are still working today to look at all the world's different habitats and biomes and kind of figure out what they're worth, like old growth forests, for example, what they provide to people in terms of food, recreation, cultural experiences. And so with SeaBank, we applied that to Southeast Alaska. We took some of the ecosystem service values and apply them to our acreage, which shows that this is a tremendously economically valuable area. And we try and update it every year and a half because things change pretty fast, whether it's a cruise ship boom or whether it's the roadless rule being reversed and reinstated and reversed and reinstated. Climate events, we update. We really track our fishery economy performance from year to year and kind of try and explain that in a way that links it to various changes in the climate or economic factors. So it covers everything. We, with a focus on fisheries, visitor economy, and then things, external forces that affect those, like logging on the Tongass or trawling in the Gulf of Alaska or, the British Columbia mines. We keep people updated. So we cover a lot in it.
It's a big report, very useful for all kinds of folks, right? Policymakers as well as fisher people and businesses and all that kind of stuff. You mentioned the roadless rule, which can you explain what the roadless rule is and that apparently it is changing?
Yeah, it's a law that, well, it's a regulation, a Department of Agriculture regulation. The Department of Agriculture includes the Forest Service that was developed in the late 1990s and promulgated in 2001. And it prohibits logging and timber road construction in what are known as inventory roadless areas or areas that have not previously been roaded or logged. And they did this for a number of reasons. To protect a lot of values, protect hunting opportunities, protect fish and fishing opportunities, and also because it was a fiscally conservative regulation. At the time, the government had a multi-billion dollar backlog in deferred maintenance on roads that it already had. And so the rationale was that if we can't afford to replace culverts and control sediment sources in the roads that we already have, why should we build new ones in intact areas? And they had a Tongass exemption to it that they considered when they were initially developed it. They were going to exclude Southeast Alaska because of the existing timber industry at the time was more embedded in the area than it was in other national forests. And they eventually decided not to exempt the Tongass. And we've been 2 years later, they did exempt the Tongass and folks went to court. And it's basically been in court almost ever since, but it has been in place. So it has protected our fishery watersheds and our wildlife from industrial scale logging and road construction since 2001.
Now, this new report that you have, the CBank report for 2026, it's going to be, you're finishing it up. It's going to be posted. There is a preview on the website, thealaskatrust.org. You can go to the CBank tab. There's a whole bunch of stuff there, the CBank report, the CBank podcast, which we're going to talk to Beth about here in a second. And then there's a preview of that, one of the chapters, I think chapter six or something like that, I think is up there. So I'm just curious, Paul, too, like in the report, are you going over like the pros and the cons of, let's say, something like the roadless rule? Like what is it going to do positively and what is it going to do potentially negatively? I know we don't have time to get into a long report about it, but is that what this sort of report does? It kind of looks at both sides and says, hey, this is what's going to be impacted here.
Yeah, well, this case, it mostly looks at it as a concern, to be honest. I don't see a lot of good about repealing the roadless rule for economic reasons as well as ecological. Our fisheries depend on these roadless wild watersheds. They are, most of the Tongass National Forest. Our wildlife depend on remaining old growth forests, and our economies do. The two largest private sector economies in Southeast Alaska, which are discussed elsewhere in the report in considerable detail, are the visitor economy and the fisheries economy. And salmon really drive the fisheries economy. They produce 50 to 70% of our economic value and or volume every year. So without successful salmon fisheries and allowing salmon to be resilient to changes in climate, it really wrecks the whole thing. And while many people in communities are seeing a lot of large cruise ship tourism, there's also a large number of Southeast Alaska-based businesses that use remote areas of the Tongass for recreation. And the way the Tongass is currently zoned, they pretty much use exclusively roadless areas, like the smaller cruise ships that take people out for adventure tourism, smaller vessels, we call them six packs, but you know, six passenger and 12 passenger vessels that take people out to experience wildlife as well as local recreationists. The tribes have been very strong in support of the roadless rule because they need these areas for hunting, gathering, and fishing. So it's really not good. If they do rescind it, which we suspect they might, it's going to cost a lot of money because it's not well known, but the Forest Service actually loses a lot of money on its timber sale program because the trees aren't really worth that much on the international market, most of them. And so it requires a multi-million dollar subsidy of planning, administration, and road construction. So it's, and that also detracts from spending in other areas, like a mile of trail generates $5 in economic activity. They're not fixing the culverts that are blocking fish passage throughout the Tongass, particularly in some of our historically most productive ecosystems. And they're not going to fix them if they have to keep spending more money on timber sales. So it's not a good scenario for the region. It may benefit a couple of companies and really that export a lot of the timber as raw logs to foreign countries anyway, rather than mill them here.
Now, just so I understand this, the roadless rule isn't just a thing for Alaska. This is just a USDA policy overall. So I have that correct, yeah?
Yeah, this is a nationwide. This is the first time they're doing it nationwide as a rescission. Okay. It's always been just the Tongass, but now they're doing it across all the national forests.
I see. And then the other thing that I know, we'd been talking to the USDA, it was last year, we were talking a lot about the Tongass Forest Revision Plan that they're currently going through. Is this going to, I mean, I don't know if you know anything about that particularly, but is that, how does that impact the CBank report, or is that included in there in terms of what might change because of the Forest Revision Plan that they're working on?
Yes, that is also in the report, and yes, that would change. In 2021, fishermen, conservationist tribes asked the department to stop doing old growth timber sales on the Tongass, except for small ones that support local operators, and they did. So we've had a little bit of a break, but now there are new policies that are directing the Forest Service to increase timber production from all national forests, and that includes Tongass. And so the Tongass plan revision is probably going to authorize a lot more logging than the current amended plan in effect, and it will authorize logging in roadless areas. They've already identified that as a potential issue. So yes, it could be harmful to the fisheries and recreation economies.
Well, the full report's going to be out soon. You can follow it at the alaskatrust.org on the CBank tab. And another thing on the on that tab, I want to talk to Beth Short Rhodes here a little bit about the CBank Chronicles podcast. Beth, can you tell me a little bit about how the podcast came about and what people can expect from the podcast? It's not just a reading of the report. I know that.
Yes, yes, very much. The podcast came about because we were looking for a way to actually take people into the ecosystem and kind of experience it on a more sensory level and a more personal level. So I take listeners on various treks through the ecosystem, and I'm the radio operator kind of directing the listener to maybe we're looking at glaciers, maybe we're going to the sea bottom to see what lives down there. And so the listener is kind of the adventurer in the story, moving through the ecosystem, learning some of the science, hearing sounds. There's music. So it's an immersive experience that the listener can kind of step into in order to experience the CBank.
And you have you have two seasons of this now, right? Are you in the second season, or is the second season complete?
The second season was done last fall. So I'll be working on a third season that will be available this October.
Okay.
So
great.
Yeah, season one and two are up on Apple Podcasts as well as the CBank website.
The CBank website. Yeah, you can go there to the alaskatrust.org, hit that CBank tab, and you can see the CBank Chronicles. We played a couple episodes, I think last spring on the show, and it's fantastic. It's like you have such a wonderful, it is very visceral and sort of really gets you in. You can just like lay back on your couch, turn on that podcast. It's only 7 minutes.
Yes.
So it's a very quick listen to. You can get through an episode a day pretty easily, and you kind of take people through. Yeah, there's a wonderful soundscape in there, and you learn a lot, which is pretty great. So when is this report? I know, Paul, you mentioned that you're finishing it up. When do you anticipate it being published for everyone to take a full look at the report?
Probably in early July. We also work with a graphics designer, and I have an editor who's got to go through my final chapter. So, and then we find when you merge Word documents into graphic design, it creates all sorts of funny things. So Beth and I have to read it, you know, over twice in detail, and we always find something new before it's final. But sometime around early July, I suspect we'll have it ready for everybody.
I love that. But you can go look at the preview now. You can read a little bit about from the new report. You can also look back and look at, it'd be really interesting to see you look back at 2024's report and then compare it to what's going to be coming out, and you can kind of get a sense of what the CBank report is all about. Very good to be educated and know what's going on at the ecosystem here in Southeast Alaska. Paul, Beth, I really appreciate you both being on the show today. Gunnath Cheesh for being here, and I look forward to reading the full report in July.
Thank you so much for having us.
And go hit the CBank Chronicles podcast on wherever you listen to your podcast, right, Beth? Wherever you listen.
Yeah, that's right. It's everywhere.
You can check it out. Gwyneth Cheese, really appreciate you being here.
Take care. Bye-bye.
This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. In 1994, Minnesota banned new nuclear power plant construction in the state. Now, lawmakers are considering whether to end that ban. Minnesota aims to fully transition to zero carbon electricity by 2040. To meet that goal, it's investing in solar, wind, and batteries. But it's not always sunny or windy out, and batteries cannot yet fill the gaps for very long. So as the state retires coal plants and prepares to phase out gas plants,
we're left with challenges in replacing the type of generation that can turn on and stay on for a very long time.
Sydney Lieb, who helps oversee utility regulation for the Minnesota Department of Commerce, says nuclear plants could help because they can provide energy 24/7 and do not emit carbon pollution. Nuclear has drawbacks, though. Building plants is slow and expensive. Dangerous nuclear waste must be managed and stored. And some people worry about the possibility of a nuclear accident, although the risk is extremely low. Advocates say nuclear is far safer than fossil fuels, which warm the climate and contribute to millions of deaths each year. So as moving to clean energy grows more urgent, Lieb says people in her state are considering,
is now the time to lift the moratorium.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. The Juno Community Foundation's Arts Vibrancy Endowment and the Artist Awards Grant Program is open to all Juno artists. The application is now open. It started on June 1st. You have until August 15th, and the award is up to $5,000. Many of the projects you have seen, heard, or witnessed in Juno have been beneficiaries of this fund. And I'm pleased to welcome to the studio now, I have Sandro Lane.
Yes.
Gwyneth Cheese. How are you today, Sandro?
Good. Thank you.
I also have Eric Kiebner from the board as well.
Yes. Yep. Hi.
Excellent. Welcome back. You were here a few weeks ago talking about a whole different fund.
Different fund. Douglas Dornan.
This is totally different. Vibrancy. Yep. And then we have Michael Busey. Welcome to the studio, Michael. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Gwyneth Cheese for being here for all of you. So I want to start with you, Michael, because you've been a recipient of this fund.
Yeah. It was 2 years ago that I received the fund and applied for it as part of an organizer, actually, of an artistic organizer. I guess you call me consigliere, I think is the word.
So,
yeah, of putting together the Juno Jazz Fest, being one of the coordinators of that.
Yeah.
And I've been really involved in that and hugely artistic experience, educational experience. And so I approached Juno Community Foundation and talked to them, and looked like the grant, it looked like we could meet the criteria of doing an artistic thing for the community, and I think it really worked out well.
So for those who may be thinking about it, right, like thinking about, oh, I should apply for something like this, how difficult was the application to do?
It wasn't. It's 2 years ago, and I'm trying to go back. I didn't find it arduous at all, and they're very helpful in the office. It's pretty straightforward.
So if you're interested in it, you can. And I know that people can do it for individual art. I know people, musicians have done it, gotten it to help make albums. I know people have gotten it to make theater projects happen. You'd like the Juno Jazz Fest, which is so like as an organizer. It's really, it doesn't have to be like, oh, I'm working on my individual project. I can be working with a group, right? I'm going to ask the Sandro this question.
Yeah, I mean, initially, as we've started off this endowment, you know, the amount of funding that we can give out in increments of 5,000 is somewhat limited. And so we were focusing, at least we have been focusing initially, on individual artists who are creating a piece, who are, you know, making a painting or doing something that has an end product. Mm-hmm. But as we grow, it's the intent of this fund and the Arts Endowment and the Arts Vibrancy Endowment to also fund organizations and projects just like Michael Busey's here, which really brings some great joy and diversity in the arts to the Juno community. That was right in the strike zone, I believe, for a group effort. It's quite lovely.
Yeah, Eric.
Boston, you asked about how hard the application was. We've tried hard to make it a one-page application. So there aren't a whole series of things you have to explain. We want to know what you're going to do. We want to know what your budget is. We want to have some idea of what you've done before. We often get submissions of previous works. Now, for Mike's application, that wouldn't have applied. But so he had an out there. He didn't have to provide a portfolio. But that's also something that people can add if they want. But it's really just a question of what would you like to do and how will that encourage and enhance the artistic vibrancy of Juno?
So that's an interesting segue. Thank you, Eric. Perfect segue. In terms of Vibrancy Fund, this endowment, is there a difference between the endowment and these artist awards grant program, or is the endowment the thing that's funding the grant program?
Well, maybe I could speak.
Yeah, unpack it for me, Sandro.
The endowment is a growing invested fund from the earnings of which are what we use to do these individual artist awards.
And I see.
So it's the endowment, as it grows, our ability to put more out into the arts community grows as well, because it's the earnings from that fund that will, you know, ad infinitum be put into the arts community in Juno.
So the endowment is there, mm-hmm. and so the endowment's invested, and that's growing. But then if people wanted to, I know, Eric, that people can always donate to different funds at mm-hmm. the Juno Community Foundation.
Right.
Like if I wanted to, in my will, put some money into the endowment fund, I could do that, right?
Yes, and to add some complications, there's also something known as the Arts and Culture Fund, which is a fund of the Community Foundation that supports artistic projects. It makes its grants out to other nonprofit organizations, so it's not an award program.
I see.
From the Arts and Culture Fund, we have funded the Symphony, the Arts, Juno Arts and Humanities Council, I think maybe even K2 for certain arts and culture projects or activities, but that is not an individual artist
grant. Right. So you can think about it as like that's for groups, and then this particular, the Artist Awards Grant Program, which I think you do with the JAC too, right?
That's for nonprofit groups that are organized as 501c3s.
Right? Yeah.
That's the distinction. Because the Arts Vibrancy Awards, yes, we are willing to fund a group if you have a group project. That I think Mike's was a good example. It wasn't going just to him. It was to enable him to put on a jazz fest.
Right, but it's an individual applying. They don't necessarily have to have a 501c3 to apply.
Exactly.
Like the artists who are making their albums, who need funds to complete their album or whatnot, they can do that through this program.
Right.
It's
a little bit confusing, but under the arts umbrella at the Juno Community Foundation, there are the two funds. One is the Arts Culture Fund, which distributes funds it receives. People donate to that fund. It's not endowed, so that money that comes in will go out. Mm-hmm. Whereas the endowment is money that goes into an investment opportunity, the earnings from which go out. So it resides permanently forever in Juno.
I see. Yeah, okay.
Whereas the other funds, money comes in, money gets granted, it can go down to zero. You know, it's not It's not an endowed fund.
But basically, as the end user, right, as somebody like Michael does, they go to the website, they say, hey, I'm an individual artist. This is the grant that I can apply for. I can get up to $5,000 to work on a project. So, Michael, I'm curious, when you got the award, how did it help your project?
There were so many expenses for the Jazz Fest, mostly involving getting artists here. So the vision was to put on a Jazz Fest for the community, educational experience, was the outcome. And so, that $5,000 went a long way to getting artists here, providing transportation while they're here, housing while they're here. So that was where all of that money went.
And that was in 25, right? That was the first time you'd done that. And then you were able to do it again this year as well, yeah?
I think it's every other year. Actually, that was the second year.
Second year.
I think it was the second year that we did the – that was the second Jazz Fest. And then this last year, this last February, was the third Jazz Fest. Next year will be the fourth Jazz Fest.
I see.
So hopefully we should be eligible, it sounds like, maybe for one of those.
Because you can – that's the other thing we should mention is if you've gotten this award in the last, two years, you can't apply. You got to wait 2 years before you can apply again. Right. Okay. Right.
This is our seventh round of grants. Grant giving. So we've put, I'm trying to remember the numbers, $150,000 so far out from the earnings of the endowment into individual artists.
And well, when you look at the past recipients, it's a who's who of Juno artists, mm-hmm. but you need to apply. If you have an idea, as Eric said, you're applying as an individual, but it doesn't mean just an individual. You can have a group project and be part of this and get your application. You have until August 15th. And as Eric mentioned, it's a simplified process. It's not too complicated. You don't have to go into pages and pages of artist statement and to justify your whole life, which I think is great. That's really good because it gets more people to apply, I think, and gets more of this money out there into the community to create great art here in Juneau, which it's just fantastic.
Maybe I could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah.
The artists that are eligible for applying for grants are all types, all styles of art that occur, whether it's fabric art, ceramic art, painting. We've talked a lot about music because that's what we love. But all art forms are eligible to apply for this grant, and so don't hold back if you have an idea. I just drew a blank on the other thing I was going to say. Well, no, I really was just going to talk for a second about Juneau's position as an arts vibrant community in the United States. There is a study that's conducted, I don't know if it's annually or biannually, but fairly regularly by SMU that rates communities across the United States in terms of arts vibrancy. I think it's some measure of dollars spent per person on art. And Juneau, on communities of under 100,000 population, ranks number 8 this year. And across all communities in the United States of 100,000 or more, it's 13th. That's just if you think about it, a small little tiny Juneau in Alaska.
I love it.
Yeah, being in a position like that. And why is that? Well, we just have a tremendous dedication to the arts in this community. We have a lot of groups that love the arts. I mean, I'm thinking of the jazz and classics and little things like Michael said, plus the larger, Sea Alaska Heritage and Gold Belt and all that. We just had Celebration, which was beautiful. Yeah. Juneau has a phenomenally vibrant art community, and this endowment that I'm going to push that I love to tout a little bit, as it grows, it'll enable and foster that even further. So it's my goal. I hope we get into the top 5.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Top 5. I love that. JunoCF.org is the website where you can go and find out more details about this application, as well as the entire Arts Vibrancy Fund. And get yourself in an application. Why not? You have until August 15th with all, as Sandro said, any kind of art, any kind of project you've got in mind, dream big. Dream big and apply. I think that's the message here. So I appreciate you all being here today. Gwyneth Cheech for coming on and telling us all about it. Congratulations on the Jazz Fest. It continues. Going to be fourth year next year.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Thank you, and KTOO, for your unending support also of
Absolutely,
the arts.
Absolutely. Happy to do it. Love to be. I have to have you all here. Eric, Michael, Sandro, thank you so much. Gwyneth Cheech.
Thank you.
This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Up next, artist Clifton Guthrie, but this is going to be first the Tlingit Word of the Week.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kehinok John Martin, and the word this week is Shaw.
Shaw.
That means mountain. And here is a sentence.
Kunach Atsiti Yatlingit Ya Uhja Nu Siti Yasha.
It's really something. For the Tlingit, the mountains are a wind fortress. Let's hear it again.
Shaw.
Mountain. Gwyneth Cheech to Hune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kehinok John Martin was Takdain Tan and a child of a Kagwantan man. He is from the Hunakawu, the people of Huna, and was a contributing elder and speaker at many language immersion gatherings in Glacier Bay, Yakutat, and Juneau. He attended boarding school in Shkakwe and attended Gonzaga University.
And tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakaya ha anikak, gunish cheesh.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Today, we're going to feature, well, last week we featured Rochelle Smallwood interviewing Jennifer Younger about the new exhibit down at On Hit, Intertwined, Returning to Our Roots. Jennifer curated and was the lead artist on the project. And today we feature another of the artists in the show. I believe you're calling in from Metlakatla. Is that right, Clifton?
Yep.
Yeah,
can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine. This is Clifton Guthrie, who is also featured in the show that is down there at On Hit. And I also have with us in the studio, I have Carly Jackson, who's Tlingit and Haida Hospitality Operation Manager. So are you basically running On Hit? Is that kind of what you're up to? Or are you doing more than that?
I'm actively running On Hit right now. Yeah. I manage the retail space.
It's so beautiful.
I also manage some of the coffee shop aspects, and then we just opened the gallery show, so that's been a big project too.
Yeah, these art shows that have been going on down at On Hit are fantastic, and this new show I went down on last Saturday and walked through. This work is unbelievable. Every single artist in this show represents themselves so well. And Clifton, are you in your studio right there? Is that what I'm seeing on the stream here?
Yeah, in the corner of my shop here.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Now you, I was reading your bio and stuff, Clifton. I thought it was really cool because you were living outside for a while, but then you decided to come home. Can you tell me a little bit about what led to that decision?
Like any village kid, I just wanted to get out and go and experience life. So I was about 20 when I got into the Carpenters Union, and I just built skyscrapers for over 10 years and grateful for that. But through that process, I was able to kind of work with I was invited to work with David Boxley down there. So even if it was an hour or part, you know, we worked so many hours building that I just kind of would take what I could get from him, and then worked on some big projects with that he had through Sea Alaska. And I just every day I feel like sitting in traffic, I would be like, call my wife and I'd say, when are we going to move home? I mean, we were high school sweethearts, and so we both felt the same way. Like every time we visited, we wanted to get the heck out of that rat race and raise our kids how we did.
That's so cool. Yeah,
it was a matter of time.
You're making me think of, the Amish and it was like you were on your own sort of Rumspringer or whatever they call that, where you go out for a while and then you realize, okay, time to come home, right? Time to come home, return. I did the same thing. There's something right about being at home, but it is good to go out and get that experience. And obviously, the experience you got, I mean, there's not many better mentors than Mr. Boxley, to sort of get your feet wet, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's so cool.
No, it was,
Yeah. So when you were, what is it that you focus on mostly now in terms of the art? I know you do a lot of mask work, you do a lot of carving. Is that the main sort of focus that you're working on right now?
Just whatever comes. I just, I was given a name back in 2014. And it's Holtkukso. That means a full canoe. And it just kind of describes who I am, man. Just whatever. It depends on we kind of live by the weather, you know how it is.
Yeah.
In these parts. So I'll be trolling one day, I'll be carving the next day. I try to do pieces for home. If somebody passes, it's usually I don't ever post about it, but I will be quick to like make a bentwood box. And traditionally, however the family deals with it, then I do stuff like that. Or orders through, just commission pieces and just really like, I just want to tell untold stories. So that's really of our own people. So right now I'm on this big kick to, right behind me is a picture. I actually stumbled, that picture of my great uncle carving that pole was, we called the lost pole for a long time. And after visiting a couple of his totem poles in Switzerland, a couple of years ago, I accidentally, it's a story of its own, and there's actually going to be a documentary about it, but I accidentally stumbled across this pole in DC. And so now I'm working with the Department of Interior, and we're actually working on getting a piece back. It just got approved to be repatriated of his chief's headdress, his Amhalite. So that'll be this summer also. So just lots
busy.
Going on.
Keep them busy.
Busy fella. Yeah.
So when you, this show, Intertwined, Returning to Our Roots, that Jennifer Younger sort of curated and put together, did she put the call out to you, Clifton, and be like, Clifton, I need you. I need your work in this show. So how did that work out?
That would have felt cool. especially coming from her, I actually got a couple of pieces of Jennifer's for my wife in the past, and I've always been a big fan of her work. And
oh, me too.
I think she, I got the call from Jarek Hope Lang, and shout out to him for kind of I think he was working with Jennifer and just kind of asked me to if I could wanted to share a space, and I said absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a great space down there on HIT, which is down there on Franklin Street, 219 South Franklin Street, I believe is the address.
Yep.
It's been open for about a year now.
It'll be a year on June 19th. That's our one-year anniversary
there. June 19th coming up soon, mm-hmm. Juneteenth. Mm-hmm. I remember the opening last year. It was so fantastic. There was a soft opening, I remember, and the space was like Rico and Crystal put in some work in there, right? And they had some big shows. And so it's just this wonderful retail space downstairs. Mm-hmm. There's the coffee shop, too, Sacred Grounds. And then upstairs, you have this opportunity, Carly, to just open up the space to, artists like Clifton, like Jennifer Younger, Rochelle Smallwood. So tell me about, how long is this show going to run there?
So we're going to run this through the end of the tourist season. We're in development for what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm.
This project has been a lot of fun. I jumped in kind of in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Jarek was with us, and he connected, he connected the artists for us, and that was wonderful. And then he went off on his grand adventure to Gold Belt Heritage.
And congrats to Jarek.
Yeah. Congrats to him. He's having a lot of fun over there.
Yeah.
He still keeps in touch and makes sure everything's okay. So that's really nice of him. And but it's really, it's been a labor of love, this project. I've learned a lot in the 6 months I've been involved, and And it's been really great getting to know Clifton and Jennifer. And, well, I knew Rochelle previously from mm-hmm. my personal life. She's actually my sister's niece.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I knew her. I knew her before, but it was really fun to work with all of them. And it was exciting. Every time we opened a new box, it was like, oh my gosh, it was just magical. Yeah, it was wonderful.
And like Clifton, I'm a big fan of Jennifer's. Like her metal work, like, mm-hmm. is just unreal. Mm-hmm. Like, and when she was on the show last week, she has such a passion for it. And I think you can see it in the work, the passion there. And I want to make sure we shout out some of the other artists who are involved in this. Her mother, Jenny Wheeler, is part of the show as well.
Yeah.
That's sort of where this idea grew up, grew out of. Rochelle Smallwood, of course, there's some awesome photos down there that Rochelle has. And there's a couple other artists who have work in the show as well, right?
They're Jenny's students.
Students, right.
I don't have all their names committed to memory, so forgive me, guys. We have little baskets, we have big baskets, we have one really cool one from Nowea, Austin Tagaban. It's a little tiny jar in a basket. It's very cool. It's my favorite.
I'm going to shout out the names here because I found the page here. So, Nowea, Austin Tagaban, mm-hmm. Karina Bell, mm-hmm. Janie Jensen, mm-hmm. Jana Tla. And then Joshua James, I don't know how to say that one, I'm sorry. Josh James, and then Genevieve James as well. And so they all have work in this show. Mm-hmm. The show's going to be up for the whole summer, which I just think is fantastic that we're going to be having this be a shout-out like that and have everybody be able to go see it. The work is also available to purchase.
Yes.
There's such a collection. The photography, mm-hmm. Clifton's work, Jennifer's work, mm-hmm. The students' work. Even if you can't get anything, if you can't buy anything, just go walk through it and feel the history there. Because the show mm-hmm. is called Returning to Our Roots, and you can really feel that in the space.
You really, really can. And the Returning to Our Roots, it really spoke to me on like a personal level. I wasn't involved in my culture for a really long time. Mm. And working at the tribe has kind of redeveloped that love. So that's been really beautiful. And it's kind of one of the goals of On Hit is to create a space where our tribal citizen artists can put their art on display mm-hmm. and potentially have their own future gallery show, or even if it's just a little retail vendor table on a first Friday or something like that. Our store is, I want to say it's a very high percentage of it's all Indigenous work, whether it's been designed or handmade. Most of it is Indigenous, and it's the large majority of it is Tlingit, Haida, or Tsimshian.
Mm-hmm.
We have some, big box items, but like stuffed animals. Who doesn't love a stuffed animal?
those are great. Stuffed animal.
Yeah.
Well, and, I picked up that limited edition sweatsuit last week. The ones with the eagle and the raven on the arms.
Yeah, those are really
cool.
And
on the
cool.
sweatpants, I got mm-hmm. myself a set of those on Saturday. That was my celebration purchase.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for coming by. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And if I had my ears pierced, I probably would have bought some earrings. But also, she has some bracelets in there that were just unreal. Like, it's amazing. So if people want to get in touch with you and find out more about On Hit or mm-hmm. maybe talk about the space, can they reach out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a store email. It's onhit@tlingitandhaida.gov.
Okay.
We also just recently launched our website, so that is out now. That is onhit.com.
Okay. Great.
Perfect. We launched the website, but we are working on developing the online purchasing portion of it. So that'll be coming in future months, which is really exciting. But if people are out of town and they want to order something like a blanket or a sweatshirt or a pair of earrings, whatever, they can always send us an email and we can invoice them right out of our computer system and then ship it off to them. So
I love that.
There's opportunities to still get the things that you might want or see posted and take home your own little Indigenous treasure.
Absolutely. And Clifton, where can we follow you? Do you have an Instagram or a website or something?
I do. I've had my Facebook for my artist Facebook is Clifton J. Guthrie Simshian Artist. And then I'm kind of new to Instagram, but I do have one, and it's probably, I think it's just Clifton J. Guthrie.
Clifton J. Guthrie.
Type that in there.
Yep. Cool. Absolutely.
Yep. So I'm taking advantage of the summer, and I'm going back to commercial fish. I commercial fish every summer for salmon. So it's my little break. It's what helps develop my pieces. You know, I sketch a lot, and yeah.
Awesome. That's so cool. Well, Tuxik Noon for being here today. Gunthcheesh for being in today. Really pleasure to have you both on the show. Congrats on this show. Go check it out at On Hit down at 219 South Franklin Street. Gunthcheesh. Thank you, Clifton. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Green energy? What about blue energy? This is Sandra Ting Lo with the lowdown on science. Every day, we need more renewable energy, but there's only so much land for windmills and solar farms. So why not capture the power of ocean waves? Enter Takahito Ida and team at the University of Osaka. They designed a simple spinning wheel inside a floating platform, like a bicycle pedal crank turned on its side. As the platform moves with every wave, the wheel spins. Spinning motion equals electricity. Results? This design could harvest up to 5 times more energy from small waves to giant ones. You know, the ocean's been flexing for billions of years. And finally, we're plugging in.
The Lowdown on Science is a production of LAist 89.3.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Tongass Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative offering checking and savings accounts, loans, and digital financial services. In Juno at 8585 Old Dairy Road in the K Plaza and at tongassfcu.com. Federally insured by NCUA. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Emil Mackey at Country Financial, offering insurance for home, auto, and business, and life insurance to protect your family in case of death. Located in the Juno Nugget Mall. More information can be found online or by calling 907-500-7017. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Perseverance Theater's renowned Summer Theater Arts Rendezvous, or STAR program. I think it's like, I don't know, 40 years old or something.
Yeah.
It kicks off this month for students 12 to 18 years old. Also, they have plans for next season, big plans. Joining me now is Kylie Ferguson, Education and Community Partnerships Manager. Gunthcheesh Wasiti. How are you today, Kylie?
Gunthcheesh. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And perhaps Leslie Ishii, Artistic Director. She's at a conference or something in Chicago. She was going to call in. We were going to talk a little bit about some stuff. But if she's not here, we'll have her back another time.
Oh, of course.
So let's start with your area of expertise, which is the STAR program, you being the Education and Community Partnerships Manager.
Yeah, no. Education is one of my favorite parts of my job at the theater. I'm really passionate about youth education, specifically in the arts, and how that can, like, impact not just their artistic vision and their selves, but also like how that can also play into things like their schoolwork, their confidence, their ability to communicate and to like filter information through the world.
You know, it's funny because I feel like, and I have said this before, because some people think about theater as like, oh, this other thing, but there's such lateral skills that you learn from being in the theater and working in the theater, even if you don't anticipate your child growing up to be a theater artisan and making the high living that they make being a theater artist. We're joking.
Oh, yes.
But you become an appreciator of the arts, but you also learn how to work with a group, how to work on a project together, how to be have something that you focus on inside of a large project, speaking skills, all kinds of things that you can learn from being in a theater arts camp.
Oh, absolutely. And also, like, empathy of, like, what does it mean to tell stories, other people's stories, your own stories? And, like, really, I would say one of our biggest goals with this camp is to build students' confidence in telling their own stories and giving them the tools. Because, like, if they create an amazing piece of art during camp, I'm thrilled. But also if they use those skills to build things outside of camp and I see them working on, like, different projects throughout the school year, it's always very, very exciting.
Mm. Okay, so what is on tap for the summer program? Because I know you've got – it's not just for actors.
No.
Tell us.
Yeah, we've made a pretty intentional decision. So we'll do about 1 week intensives, with musical theater being 2 weeks. But trying to partner a very performance-centered intensive with a not-so-performance-centered intensive. So our very first week, we have an acting intensive, and then we also have a technical theater intensive.
Okay.
And so that includes everything from, like, lighting to costumes and stage management, because theater's a team sport. You got people who want to be on the stage, and you have people that are like, I do not in any way.
I never want to be on the stage.
If you
ever
put me on the stage, I will scream, but I want to be involved in theater. And so it was a big I would say it was a conscious decision for us to be like, okay, how do we make sure there are opportunities for students to be like, I'm really interested in this, I'm really interested in that. Because the last thing I want is a student coming in and being like, oh gosh, now I have to go on the stage. And being like, no, let's find an area that, like, is
Mom
really...
Mom signed me up and now I have
exactly.
to
exactly. Like, okay, no, let's find an area that, like, you can really clue into. Like, is it plays, playwriting? Is it props? Like, how can we help you find a way into theater? Because it is for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So when you register, you can register for multiple weeks at a time?
Yeah.
Or how does that work?
Absolutely. So not loosey-goosey, but we allow each student to be like, what programming are you specifically interested in?
Mm-hmm.
So we have some students that are like, I'm doing the acting intensive the first week, I'm doing musical theater the second and third week, and then I'm going into a devised theater intensive the fourth week.
There's a devised theater
there
intensive?
There is
can
a devised theater.
Can you tell us what devised theater is?
Yeah. So devised theater is, it's all about creating an ensemble and a cohort to create pieces that are interesting to the students. So they are like the driving force of what are they interested in, what stories do they want to tell, and then how do we get from a little kernel of an idea to a full performance on that Friday. That kind of came from, this is only our second year doing it, and this came from our playwriting course, in which students were like kind of writing their very first drafts, but they kind of wanted more time with these pieces. Slash, sometimes we have students that are like, I want to be creating my own work, but the thought of typing on a computer makes me very sad.
Mm.
So trying to find an alternative way of, like, what are some different ways of creating theater and, like, putting your work up on its feet that don't necessarily require sitting at a laptop for several hours, because there's a lot of different ways to create theater.
And this runs, it opens on June 22nd, right? Camp starts on the 22nd.
Yeah.
And so you're registering now.
Oh, yeah.
What's the best way for people to learn more and to register?
Yeah, the best way is going to our website, ptalaska.org. You'll have a little star 2026 area there. You can also go to our Instagram, Facebook. They'll all send you to the same link.
I see. Okay. And you can find out about all the different areas and the costs involved and all that. Do you have scholarships and
we
stuff?
We do have scholarships. I would say a large part of when we're looking at, like, how are we going to fund this is going, how do we get scholarship money so that we can make sure that everyone has an opportunity to benefit and learn from theatrical arts training.
Yeah. Cost shouldn't be prohibitive to
exactly.
that. Exactly. So it doesn't look like we're going to have Leslie today, but I do want to mention a couple of the season announcements that are happening for Perseverance. Some people may have already heard about this, but this is a big, big deal. It's been in process, I guess, working on it for the last several years.
It's been in workshop for a while.
It's a huge thing. It's the first ever Tlingit opera.
Yeah.
And it's going to open on September 11th, 2026. It was written by two awesome individuals. Ed Littlefield is the music person.
Yes.
And Vera Starbart is the librettist of the, which means she wrote the words. And then Ed did all the music. And I remember seeing like the first act of a workshop or something a couple years ago. It's so beautiful. This is going to be such a beautiful project. It's huge. It's being co-produced and co-commissioned by the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And so also Hune Lance Twitchell is involved, and then Rory Stitt as well. People will remember Rory Stitt. He's the orchestrator of Ed's compositions. So this is going to be a giant deal. You're not going to be doing this at the theater in Douglas.
Yeah, we actually had to have a lot of conversations about that, of like, this show is basically bigger than our space.
Yeah.
So having that conversation of like, well, where does an orchestra go?
Right.
Where can we put all these dancers? Where can we put all these actors, these singers? So we're actually going to be at Juno Douglas High School to put up this show, which is really exciting. Being in a different space, I think, is going to have its own challenges. But
yeah.
They were the best area to accommodate.
And it's going to be an amazing, it's a huge cast, all Indigenous performers.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be so cool. It's going to be directed by Madeline Sayet.
Yay!
And so that opens on September 11th. And then you've got the other show that's happening in Juneau. This is also a big deal.
It is.
You say, what is the last show? Tell me about the last show.
Yeah.
And who's directing it?
Okay. Oh, goodness. Now I'm like, do I have the gusto, the excitement for it? So our last show, which is going to be in that winter-spring slot, is Gaslight,
mm-hmm.
Directed by the well-known, famous returner to the area, Molly Smith, the original founder and artistic director of Perseverance Theater.
Yeah, she ran Perseverance for 30 years or something
mm-hmm.
like that before going off to Arena Stage, one of the largest theaters in the country. And Molly has returned to Juneau and will be returning to direct this new adaptation of Gaslight. It's a classic play.
Mm-hmm.
It's where the term gaslighting comes from.
It is.
And so it's a really cool story about a man who is sort of trying to drive his wife insane.
A little bit, but Boston, it's for the best reason. He's trying to get a treasure.
He wants to, of course. It's always about that. It reminds me of The Heiress a little bit, too, if you've ever seen The Heiress. Oh, it's a great movie with Montgomery Clift. Anyway, that's going to be happening in, like you said, February 27th through March 14th, 2027. Molly Smith's return to Perseverance Theater.
We could not be more excited.
So get your season tickets available for that. You can go to ptalaska.org. And then you have another show that will not be playing in Juneau, because as we know, Perseverance is back and forth to Juneau
mm-hmm.
and Anchorage. But Rio Alberto, who works with the theater, is going to be directing Wolf at the Door up there in Anchorage in November. So if you know folks up in Anchorage who maybe want to, I think you're taking auditions for that
now, right?
We
are, yeah.
Yeah, so auditions are happening now for that. So all things going on at Perseverance Theater. Summer Fine Arts Camp first up. Kylie Ferguson, Education and Community Partnerships Manager, with all kinds of awesome people involved in teaching that. You can find out more at ptalaska.org. Go to the Star 2026 tab. And then a new awesome season coming from Perseverance in 26-27. Kylie, thank you so much. Gunachish, for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Gunachish.
Yeah, Gunachish. That's going to do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow, tune in for a special rebroadcast of our rainy day conversation with author and true crime enthusiast Betsy Longenbaugh. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday right here on KTO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Ak Bay 91.7. You can find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon. You can find live stream archives on our YouTube page. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunath Cheesh, have a fantastic Thursday.